Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Not Flightline. It's not Wetzel the horse. It's Peruna, the Shetland pony who treated George W. Bush to a treat and then rushed for 1,320. I mean, you're exhausted at the end of that.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
You know, one longtime booster came up to me after the game on the field and said, you know, and this is probably recency bias, but said that's the gutsiest, biggest call in Tiger Stadium history.
And SI's Pat Forte.
There's a lot of Notre Dame fans that are viewing Brian Kelly the same way Oklahoma fans are viewing Lincoln Riley. They're pissed at him, they hate him, and they want him to flop, and he's not flopping, and it's making them despair.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and welcome to my family. I think that was a bad imitation of a bad imitation.
Yes, it was.
He can say it however he wants, Dan.
They're all going to say it. I was like, if this is not Brian Kelly, like he doesn't have, his jokes are horrible. He's got bad timing.
Yeah.
They're dry. Like I get what he's trying to say. Like, remember he wanted to execute everybody once. It's like, it's a funny line.
Got that line wrong.
He just gets it wrong, but he needed to walk into that press conference and open with that and just own. And then I swear they'd make banners about it. Like it'll turn into a thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan, Les Miles ate grass down there and it became a thing. So, like, just own it, laugh about it, because guess what? We told you the guy can coach.
Yep.
And you may not like him. You may hate stuff that happened at Notre Dame. You may think he's fake and the accent was terrible and he tries to, all of that. He wins football games. And he's been winning them since he was at Division II. And it was like, you think it will work. It's not a cultural fit. Take a really good coach with lots of talent. Yeah, they're going to win. And he didn't really have lots of talent. He's got really good talent. But as I said last week, he's been dying to play Bama with something he thought he could beat him with. And 32, 31, overtime, Jaden Daniels. Incredible game. Kelly goes for two to win it. Says, if I got that shot, one play to beat Bama, I'm going with it. They had a really good play set up, which I think is the underrated part of analytics. It's like, the analytics say go for it. It's like, did they tell you to throw a fade route to the back corner? Like that works when there's Randy Moss back there. But he hits Mason Taylor, freshman tight end, and bang, 2-point, win it. Ross Dellinger, you were there. Are the ears still ringing?
Yeah, it was incredibly loud. And Brian Kelly said, you know, he praised the fans and the stadium and all that and the atmosphere afterward. But Beth Rex, his chief of staff, who's been with him for years, was with him at Notre Dame, came up to me after the game. Like, they warned us that it would be loud. But I've never heard anything like this. And it was just shaking. You know, LSU's press box is fairly new. It's one of the newer ones. And it's not like a lot of the ones in older ones where it sways and it shakes. I've covered a mini game there. I've never seen it shake. And it shook. It shook in the fourth quarter last night. It was crazy. It was an incredible electric atmosphere. And just an amazing game. Just a back and forth. It started out as this, like, you know, defensive struggle, and you felt like we were going back in time. It was 9-7 and 14-9, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, you know, the quarterbacks took over. Two really good athletes just kind of took over the game, and it was just a really exciting one. And then of course the end. I think that a lot of people kind of gasped. Even I talked to him afterward, even AD Scott Woodward, just like he said he thought, holy shit, what are we doing going for two? And and then he said he thought about it. And he said, you know what? We got him on the ropes. We might as well knock him out. And it was a play that Brian Kelly used at Notre Dame in 2014 in a loss to Florida State. They actually scored on that play. It was fourth and goal against Florida State in 2014. with like 17 seconds left. They were down by four, and they scored on the play, but they were called for offensive pass interference. Same exact play. I got Kelly after the news conference to confirm it was the same exact play, and he said, I called it because I knew this time we wouldn't get called for a pick. I didn't really get much more on why he thought they wouldn't get called for a pick. They were obviously at home, so I'm sure that he thought in his mind that that may have helped. But yeah, just an unbelievable, exciting game, classic game. You know, one longtime booster came up to me after the game on the field and said, you know, and this is probably recency bias, but said that's the gutsiest, biggest call in Tiger Stadium history, which is obviously a thing that could be debatable. And I think what it does for the grand scheme of things, right, is even bigger. Like, yes, it was a classic. It was an unbelievable atmosphere. It was a great call. Like, there's all these things about the game. But holy cow, LSU is in the driver's seat to win the SEC West and become potentially, it would take an upset against Georgia and Atlanta to be the first two-loss team to make it the CFP. So, wild.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. And it does, to me, yeah, it changes a lot of things big picture. I think everybody could see, everybody wanted to see that Brian Kelly had this thing going in the right direction and it was going to be good. And now this is like that validation. Oh, it's not only going to be good, it's going to be good faster than people maybe expected. You know, you're 9 games in and you're 7-2 and you've beaten Alabama. And yeah, you may win the West and you're going to have a chance to play for an SEC championship. So nobody looked at this LSU team, I don't think, in August and were saying those things. Secondly, hey, I think we got to start doubting the direction of Alabama.
Oh.
I've done it before and been wrong. Like the inevitable beginning of the inevitable end of dominance. I think I said it in 2015 when they lost for the second straight year to Mississippi. And I was wrong. They've only won like 3 championships since then. national championships. But for Alabama to be out of the playoff race at this early a juncture is the first time. To be out of the SEC West championship race most likely is at this early a juncture is the first time since 2007. This team doesn't look like a lot of Nick Saban teams. They don't make enough plays on defense. They make too many mistakes. There's just something lacking with the team that we all did come into the season saying that is the best team in the country and maybe an all-time great Alabama team. And it's not that by any stretch. It's the worst Alabama team since 2010 in terms of results on the field. So I think we'll see. And again, they may turn around next year and go 15-0. But as of right now, I'm starting to wonder.
All right, let's slow the roll a little bit here. I'm going to give you this. Okay. They lack a playmaker at wide receiver. The guy that just would, I just don't, they had that long stretch where it's just like, there's just absolute stud every time. And they needed that big play. They got him. Their cornerbacks, I think we got issues in the secondary. Not great. I'll get to the game management a little bit here, but yep. The two things is they lost at the buzzer on a field goal at Tennessee, and they lost on a 2-point conversion in overtime. This is as close as you can get to being unbeaten. But I will grant you they did lose them both, and you are what your record is, right?
And they're 2 plays away from having lost 4 games.
They are 2 plays away from losing 4 games, yep. So maybe it's a split. Mm-hmm. The end-of-game time management at Tennessee gave Tennessee the chance for that field goal.
Yep.
And the analytics on keep going for 2 changed what LSU had to do on the final draft. Drive. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Twice they went for 2, didn't get them. They kicked those field goals. They got 30 or extra points. They got 33, right? And right, was there 2 times they went for 2?
I was 2 times. Okay. And they missed them both.
Missed them both. So there is that. But I'm not sure I'm ready to go that route. But this is not it. And it's a weird deal as watching Bryce Young walk off the field. You're like, This is an all-time great college football player. My God, what a game. I mean, they're dead without him last night.
Yeah.
So many great plays. Such a likable player. So much fun to watch. And it's like, wow, it's over for him. I mean, he's not going to be a starting QB to win the national title. And it kind of one of those things, like, it's rare a guy has this big of an impact on multiple seasons. It's kind of like the centerpiece of the sport for two seasons, and he ain't going to win a title. And he's playing at Bama. It's not like, well, Johnny Manziel came along at, you know, somewhere else. It's like, wow. So that was kind of like, I kind of felt bad for him at the end. He's walking off and he just saw the sheer disappointment of like, God, I did everything here. It's not going to happen. So I'm not quite ready to go on that. Now, to Ross's point, yeah, to me, this is the statement game from Kelly. We're going to be good. It's back. Let's go. You know, I think any doubts are over. He should do really well in recruiting going forward in the state of Louisiana. I'm sure there was a million recruits there from the South. Just the day before, they land Colin Hurley, who is going to be who's a kid from Florida who just reclassified to the 2024 class. So he'll be a high school senior next fall, and he'll be rated one of the top couple quarterbacks in the country. That's a huge get. Like, when you're going into Florida and taking a player out of there that certainly Georgia, Alabama, Florida, all those teams wanted, that's a big step. So future extremely bright on LSU. Now let's get to this playoff bit, because it'll lead into the game Pat was at. Or do you have more thoughts on this, Ross, on this game?
You know, I will tell a little bit. I've been here for a few days, and Thursday I went to the Brian Kelly radio show, and I talked to him after the show, and man, he was really confident. I just remember coming away thinking, man, that was weird. I was like it was like just a 2-minute conversation during a break of the radio show, but I was thinking that was just really weird to be like so confident, you know, going into a game against Alabama. But he said things like, look, you know, they have some holes, you know, and they've been exposed a little this year, and they're undisciplined, and, you know, they had 9 penalties last night. So he was feeling it. He was feeling confident. And obviously the call at the end, he certainly was feeling confident. I think there's a little vindication, if you will. You know, he spent a lot of the offseason. I visited them in March, and there was a lot of offseason, as you mentioned off the top, Dan, you know, the accent and the dancing videos in the recruiting game and some of the stories that had come out in recruiting of him and, you know, being in Louisiana and how different it is and weird for him as a fit, and everybody saying, hey, you know, he just left for the money, and being the first Notre Dame to coach to leave voluntarily in 100 years. You know, there's just a lot of critics, you know, and a couple of his staff members had told me that it really got to them, maybe not as much to him, but I'm sure, you know, he knew about it. He was aware of all the critics and stuff, and it felt like that was a kind of a punchback from him last night. And in the bigger picture of recruiting, you know, you made a good point. Last night was insane on the sideline. I don't know that I've ever seen more recruits on the sideline of a game. And it was like, it had to be 75, 100. I mean, it was wild. I mean, to the bitter end, 2 hours after the game, Brian Kelly's walking off the field from a post-game radio hit, like 2 hours after the ending. Nobody's left in the stadium except for this kid, who was obviously a recruit, and Brian Kelly put his arm around him. They walked in the locker room together. But it's huge for recruiting. That game, there's a lot of people there, a lot of big names there.
All right, so we put this as our 14 teams with a shot at the title, shot at the playoff. I think we lost for sure one yesterday in Illinois. So maybe we're down to 13. I have to reanalyze. But I think that's the only one we lost for sure yesterday, although Clemson and North Carolina could be lost too. Let's get to that later as we work through that. Bama's done unless LSU blows its last two games and then Bama wins out. They could still actually could they make it or no? Yeah, they need two losses by LSU. So Bama's done.
LSU only has two more SEC games, so they have to lose them both. It's at Arkansas and at Texas A&M, you know, combined like, I don't know, what, 8-7 or 8-11 or something record. So
the corpse of the Aggies. And Arkansas has lost of Liberty. So the corpse of the corpse. They not going well. So probably not. Bama, you know, like Bama's dead, but hold on now, right? Like they get back in and beat Georgia and they're like, hey, look at our two losses, right? I don't know. LSU has two losses. Can they get in if they beat Georgia? They would win the SEC. Very hard to see how that isn't the case. That said, here we are with Georgia. That doesn't look like anyone's going to beat them. Now, Pat, you were over there. They controlled, came out the gate against Tennessee, dominated them early. I think what we said last week, like best gift Kirby Smart could have had this year was this week was saying, hey, they don't even think we guys win eight straight games and they don't think you're number one after winning the title. Who are these Tennessee guys? They just blitz them early. What was the scene like in Sanford Stadium? And are your ears still hurting?
Yes, they are. There's that, you know, open air press box there, which is phenomenal. And it was just, it was painful, literally painful listening to the crowd at times, especially like in the third quarter when they were just whipping up a frenzy and just flying in on blitzes at poor Hendon Hooker. That's when it was like, oh my gosh, this is complete mayhem. And the decibel meter on the scoreboard, you never know. Those things could be complete bunk. But it was like 132 decibels. I looked it up, like jet engine takeoff is like 130. So, I mean, it was unbelievable. I asked Stetson Bennett, who has, of course, been there for almost every home game in Georgia history because he's that old. He said it was the loudest he'd ever heard. Somebody asked Kirby, and Kirby's like, well, what's more deafening than deafening? Does it really matter? You reach a point where it doesn't matter. But a
lot of false starts.
Another thing, yeah, well, honestly, and here's what I was thinking again about what we have talked about the best teams wanting to have quarterfinals at home in the playoff. Not just comfort and getting recruits in there, but literal home field advantage.
Sure.
Seven pre-snap penalties on Tennessee, and not only that, when they weren't false starting, they were slower off the snap. And so they're getting beat in pass protection. And Kirby Smart made that point. The 0.2 tenths of a second that you get can matter. So, I mean, the real tangible reasons you can win a game at home and probably would rather play a game at home if you're a good team in a playoff setting as opposed to a more artificial setting. Anyway, long story short, totally dominant performance, by far the best team in the country right now, right? I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of arguing that. They hit big plays on offense. And part of that was Tennessee's defensive secondary had some busts and wasn't very good. But they hit the plays. They hit the open receivers. They got guys open. They ran the ball really effectively in the first half. Second half, Kirby channeled his old Nick Saban self, you know, and just said, starting to rain, we're just going to run the ball. We'll just tuck it in and we'll take this victory. Tennessee had a great season, but they weren't ready for this. Not a complete team the way Georgia is. Georgia, they're, you know, find a weakness, go ahead and try to exploit it. I think that unless something really, really crazy happens, they're going to be your number one playoff seed come December.
Well, they've got LSU maybe in Atlanta. That's really it. Or maybe probably LSU. LSU controls its fate. I guess Ole Miss, like I said, Ole Miss could get there too, maybe.
Well, yeah. I mean,
there's
a better chance at Ole Miss getting there probably than Alabama in a lot of ways because right. Ole Miss would.
Only need one loss.
You only need one loss from LSU, right? Yeah. Right. They'd have to win out, of course, which means beating Alabama this coming week.
All right. So what happens to Tennessee? Are we on a spot, much to the excitement of the rest of the country, where we only get one SEC team in? Or what is Tennessee's argument going to be at 11-1, and what help does it need? You know, this is the tough part. Quickly, this is why home field advantage would be great in the future playoffs, because Tennessee would lose this game and lose something substantial.
Right.
Right now they're out, yeah. But in the future, they're still getting in. And if you're playing these things, a lot of neutral site game, it's like, no, if you got to get back in there, you may have to come back through Georgia, right? Home field advantage has to be, is a huge reward, as you mentioned. But what do you think of Tennessee's chances here? They got beat soundly. The game, I said on Race for the Case, I got it wrong, but I thought they had backdoor cover written all over them. And then, you know, they didn't pull it off, but they got beat soundly in this game. It was not as close as the score. You know, what is Tennessee's, it's great season, great momentum, awesome for Josh Heupel. If they end up 11-1, phenomenal season, but can they get in again, and can they get a rematch with Georgia, which is that where they would probably be the four?
If you look at how it could line up, I mean, they probably need, well, they put in probably, they need Georgia to be, you know, to beat LSU in the championship game. And if Georgia beats LSU, especially if Georgia beats LSU handily and pulls away as being the clear number one team in the country, which I think right now everybody would say it is. But if it continues to do that in, you know, especially if it throttles LSU in the SEC championship game, you know, it just gives more to that game that Tennessee played against Georgia. And I think, I mean, I would be, you know, kind of surprised in a lot of ways if Georgia beats LSU, especially if it beats LSU handily in the SEC championship game, and Tennessee doesn't get in. I obviously they need some things to happen here and there, but like I think it's setting up for it to happen. I know nobody wants it to happen. It's setting up for it to happen, and then of course there's option B to this, which is LSU upsetting Georgia in the SEC championship game, becoming the first two-loss CFP team. And Georgia at that point, SEC would definitely have two teams in at that point, for sure would have two teams in, I would think, with Georgia and LSU. So, but obviously Tennessee needs some things to happen, right? They need, you know, what they need, they need TCU probably to take a loss at some point. You know, already the Pac-12 champion will have a loss, so that's going to help them a little bit. But they do, they would need some things to kind of go their way. They don't necessarily control their own destiny, so to speak.
Tennessee does not. And we're going to get to Notre Dame Clemson because that's equally. Pat, you had something on that? I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tennessee to me goes to the head of the one loss class. Their one loss is 14 points, and I agree it was not that close, but 14 points to the best team. Oregon lost to that same team by 46. So they're going to be ahead of Oregon, and Oregon is the best one loss team resume wise in the Pac-12. Somebody's getting a loss between Ohio State and Michigan. Mm-hmm. How would that team measure up at 11-1 against Tennessee if you tease it out and they both win the rest of their games? The TCU factor. So if you get undefeated Georgia, say you get, all right, undefeated Michigan, then you've got one loss Ohio State, one loss Tennessee. Maybe, or you do or you don't have an undefeated TCU. You would have those three. If TCU's undefeated, you probably have those three for two spots. Oregon could maybe make an argument, but I said I think Tennessee is ahead of Oregon right now. And then we'll see how it plays out.
It hurts them that they actually had a common opponent, right? It actually hurts. Yeah. It hurts Oregon. Yeah. They have a common opponent that you can judge by. And that was on a neutral field. Well, you know, neutral, quote unquote. it wasn't all that neutral, I know.
Well, this is – so I want to get to this. We're going to get to Clemson, Notre Dame, because I think that does eliminate the ACC or puts them in a really hard spot. And that was an incredible night.
Yep.
The Michigan-Ohio State game, though, they're barreling to this, you know, 11-0, and Ohio State survived that. You know, you can look at that game against Northwestern. They didn't play a great game, but it was so windy that they could, you know, like you could only move the ball when they had the wind. Pat Fitzgerald was amazing, amazing coach. He pretty much controlled the first half by just grinding. He's grinding clock when he doesn't have the wind, and then he's running tempo when he does. And I mean, it's not that that's not an obvious strategy, and they did a little Ohio State too, but like to be able to do that with a one win team and get your guys to actually pull it off, you know, like you're a good coach. They got no players, but Michigan struggled with Rutgers in the first half, but Michigan could go to Ohio State 11-0, lose on the proverbial last second field goal, right? And you look at their wins, and they got Nebraska and Illinois, like they have pretty much pummeled everybody. The only game that was close was, I mean, I guess the next closest game Maryland. And I don't know. I watched some of that. I don't recall a moment where I really was like, oh, Maryland's going to beat them. I mean, they're dominating people. Now, their mistake was they played zero in the non-conference, and they'd feel a lot better with their case. But everyone talks about two losses in the SEC. What if it's two losses in the Big Ten? I mean, one loss. I'm sorry, two teams in the SEC. What if it's two in the Big Ten? And that could complicate a lot of things because Michigan, they're good. And it's like, well, do we want to put Michigan in and rematch last year's Georgia blowout? Or do we want to put Tennessee in and rematch this blowout? Do we put Oregon in? It's like there are a lot of good teams, and I don't know. I mean, I assume if Ohio State loses at home, maybe they don't get that benefit, but maybe they do. So I think that's a wild card there in that huge game the day after Thanksgiving. And as my friend Nathan Knapp, who listens to the podcast and is a Michigan fan, says, they should just cancel the Big Ten championship game because the West sucks.
Right. You're going to get – it's going to be a bad game that the winner doesn't get much out of. Yeah.
Yeah, right. It actually lowers all their values, right?
Yeah,
probably.
Right. Yeah.
Like it's Illinois. A great example got beat.
Of why they're eliminating divisions, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Illinois got beat by Michigan State is minus 10 guys. Yeah. and it wasn't that right. close. So, I mean, like, this is a joke. So, but whatever. So, it's kind of survive and advance thing for Michigan and Michigan Ohio State. I mean, they very well could be two and they could be ranked 2-3, right, this week. Pat?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I would expect that they will be in whatever order you want to put them. And then, yeah, that's I could very easily see it where you have an 11-1 second best team in the Big Ten and an 11-1 second best team in the SEC. And then what else do you have? You're going to have Georgia, and if TCU runs it, then it gets real interesting. Does undefeated in. TCU? They should be in if they're 13-0.
They got to be. Yeah,
they'd be number three.
They're going to leave them out again.
They'd be number three. So you'd have Georgia one. So, let's say Ohio State wins.
Yeah.
For sake of this argument, they're two. TCU wins. They're three. Now you have a 11-1 Pac-12 champion.
12-1. Four one-loss teams, right? You could have Clemson. You could have Oregon. You could have
Clemson or UNC, or
Michigan, and Tennessee.
That is a tricky little debate that could that's be getting tough. Set
yes,
up.
Yes, it is. And that's if you're Michigan, you don't want that debate because of the non-conference schedule.
I was just about to say Michigan's non-conference would. I don't want to say eliminate it from that group, but that would be they would that they have sent a message about that. I feel like and that would be that would hurt them. Very much. I mean, in that situation, I would think that it would probably be Tennessee. But you don't want a rematch. Like, who wants a rematch, you know, in the wherever they would play, Fiesta or what's the other one, Atlanta?
Peach, which would be where Georgia would want to play.
Yeah, would want to play, right. I mean, God, you wouldn't think they'd want a rematch. Almost at that point, I'd be almost for just avoiding a rematch in some way and throwing Oregon in there or something. But then that would be another rematch in the
same building.
So here we are, you know. It's just
Michigan from last year, same. This is it. So
this is the problem with college football, right?
You kind of want
Georgia's
USC
beating everybody that's been in their path. That's the problem.
Well,
USC would be that. That's a good call. USC, like, running the table from here on out, that would be a good one, and that would be a pretty good resume. I would think that would be a pretty good resume to stack up against Tennessee and Michigan and Clemson and maybe win that argument.
Or UCLA. UCLA's still sitting there, too.
That's true, yeah.
I am going to posit that Clemson's done, and I think Notre Dame did everybody a favor Saturday night, including probably Clemson. I know it's probably hard to admit that as a Clemson fan that you didn't want to get to the playoff, but this just isn't a great Clemson team.
Nope.
This is a good Clemson team, and they're good enough to win the ACC, but this is not, you know what a championship team looks like at Clemson, and this isn't it.
Alabama and Clemson never missed the playoff, right? Both of them at the same time, right?
Right. We've Alabama never had a playoff both of them.
Yeah, it could happen. Could happen for the first
could
time.
Could very well happen. Yeah. This was not a close loss. They were down 28-0. I mean, they lost 35-14. Notre Dame just ran the ball down their throat, 263 yards. There was a defensive touchdown, a special team touchdown. It was a squirrel. William Christopher Sweeney, quote, "This was an ass-kicking period." That's what it is. Just flat out got our tails handed to us. That's unfortunate. Worst loss by an unranked opponent since in over a decade. Just really bad day, Sweeney said. You know, he has DJ Ungolay in there. He's going nowhere. It is windy there, but they can't switch up. He brings in Cade Klubnik to try to spark things. He immediately throws a horrible pick six, one of two pick sixes. This was just not This was just not good. I don't know how Clemson comes back from that. And because Notre Dame could still end up with four losses. They got a trip. They're playing really well. They played a great game. We'll get to the Notre Dame side in a sec. But I don't know how they come back, and I don't know how UNC comes back. I mean, you're looking at either UNC or Clemson saying, hey, we should be in the playoff, and someone going, Notre Dame's got four, lost to Marshall. I mean, come on, right? So I think the ACC's cooked. Ross?
Yeah, we've kind of forgot about Clemson or North Carolina's been like the quietest one-loss team that I can remember in recent memory. We just they kind of sneaked up on us after an early season loss.
They've just kind
of been on a roll, and Drake May is just tore it up at quarterback. And yeah, I kind of forgot about him in this kind of forgot about them in this conversation. But you know, Clemson's got Louisville, Miami in South Carolina, and then the ACC championship game. So I mean,
they need a lot to happen is what I would say.
I agree. And there you know, I know the committee spends a lot of time, like if we're comparing 4 or 5 1 loss teams, I know this committee puts a lot of emphasis on the loss. Like, you know, in fact, the term good loss was used this past week during the conference call with the chairman, the committee chairman. So I know they look at losses, and obviously, I mean, that loss is going to be to, like you said, a potential 4-loss Notre Dame team in just a drubbing. Like, it just wasn't close. So if you look at the losses, you know, they probably have, I guess, one of the worst losses, right up there with Oregon. But
I know you didn't watch the game, but it was not. You were covering LSU at that point, Alabama. Yeah. But it was, the Irish were fired. I mean, it was just dominant. They just dominated the game. Pat, what do you think? Is the ACC done, or just done unless a whole bunch of crap happens?
Yeah, done unless a whole bunch of crap happens, but probably done. Yeah. Notre Dame eliminated them. Notre Dame single-handedly, the semi-league member, eliminated them by beating North Carolina on the road and then trouncing Clemson. And as we said, I mean, this is like the worst Notre Dame team in several years. So if your two best teams have both lost to that team, you're out, I would think, unless you just have a spate of one-loss teams that become two-loss teams here in the near future. So, yeah, sorry. And I will say about Clemson, what I said about Alabama is the window closing. The dynasty, the dominance from Clemson. Last year's team, not very good. This year's team, better record. I'm not sure they're that much better as a team. You know, Clemson was awesome when they had a transformational quarterback. They had a lot of other great players. They had great defensive linemen. They had great receivers. They had great running backs. But when they don't have Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence, you know, still a good program. But are they going to be competing for national championships year in, year out going forward? I don't know.
Well, we talk a lot, too, about Dabo Swinney, his staff, in the cohesion they had. Like, you know, wasn't it like multiple years in a row where like literally nobody changed positions on the team, or just like one guy did, and he kept his coordinators forever. And we've seen the last, 3 to 5 years, like that change, or the last 3 years or so, that change. Like, he lost, you know, Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott, and lost a couple others, Venables, of course. So, you know, that changeover has led to some bumps, it looks like. I mean, that, or at least coincided with some bumps. And you can't overlook that, because for so long, I think they were, you know, the kind of the shining example in college sports of consistency and cohesion on the staff. And they've had some departures, and it, whether it led to losses or not directly, it's definitely coincided with the dip.
28 consecutive regular season victories for Notre Dame now in the ACC. They lost
Maybe they should join the ACC title game.
Really?
But other than that.
Yeah.
Wow.
They have maybe not they lost should one join since the league.
2016, when they had that like 3-win season.
That is incredible.
And they have just dominated this league that they're not even in. And
they don't want to be in it. It's like they want them to be in it, and they're the ones doing the dominant, kicking everybody's asses, and they don't want to be in it.
They have, I say it again and again, they have the best situation in sports. They get five league opponents. They line them up and down the East Coast, down the Southeast, where they want to recruit. You know, they think this was a huge recruiting day for Notre Dame. Whew. And they get the big game. and they beat them all. And they're like, yeah, we're not in your league. We'll trade three more league games for Navy and two games out west where we like to recruit in California. It's freaking ideal, right? And our home games, we can get all the kids in the Midwest to drive over to watch. So it's like, it's a perfect situation. They've got a great deal. The thing that scares me about Clemson on this was Notre Dame often has really good offensive lines. And when you have Michael Mayer, who, you know, is tremendous talent blocking, you can have a really good run game. But, I mean, they just dominated the line of scrimmage against Clemson, and they knew it was coming. They knew it was going to be Diggs or Tyree or Audric or whatever. Drew Pine threw 17 attempts. Like, he had 85 yards passing. He's a backup of a backup. You know, he's a nice, did a great job and threw a great pass to Mayer and did a little celebrate, did the Conor McGregor billionaires walk. But for the most part, you know, they're going to run it. And Notre Dame just ran it at Clemson. That is like, this D line is not the one that they had a few years ago. Quickly, Marcus Freeman, rough start to the season. Could not get out of there, you know, lost the first two. Marshall, the Stanford loss, you know, they were the games they could have won and they'd be in great shape. But this isn't a great team, but it was very like, all right, we're going to give him time. He's 35. He's first-time head coach, but a little scary. This was his night, as Brian Kelly's having his down there. This had to be the night that really settled a lot of nerves and got a lot of excitement, because the scene in South Bend was, they're never going to be as wild in South Bend as they are in Baton Rouge, but by South Bend standards, really, really good. And I know they had a million recruits up on that thing. Pat, what do you think of Marcus Freeman's moment here?
Huge, huge. He needed it, especially as Brian Kelly has continued to ascend at LSU. I mean, I know there's a lot of Notre Dame fans that are viewing Brian Kelly the same way Oklahoma fans are viewing Lincoln Riley. They're pissed at him, they hate him, and they want him to flop, and he's not flopping, and it's making them despair. And meanwhile, their guy, their replacement guy, isn't doing very well. But now Marcus Freeman has a flag-planting win. You know, you beat a top-five opponent, a team that was in the playoff bracket on the first night of the rankings. That's huge for them. And you not just beat them, you beat them down. So there's no underestimating, I think, what that does, what you said, Dan, settles nerves, gets people more energized. Like, okay, this is our guy. We're going to be fine for the long haul. Let's go. If you can back that up by winning at USC at the end of the year, people are going to be really excited coming out of this season.
Yeah, we talked about Notre Dame quite a bit on here about the Jekyll and Hyde, right? It's like three or four straight weeks now we've brought it up and, you know, wondering who's going to show up. And boy, yeah, the good one showed on Saturday. It's just, I've probably beaten a dead horse here, but it's just incredible their schedule. I don't recall losses and wins like this in any team in like recent memory. I don't recall a team losing to arguably the worst Power 5 team at home, Stanford. You know, one of the worst teams probably in FBS in Marshall at home, and then beating on the road North Carolina, beating on the road a top 20 Syracuse team, you know, BYU in a neutral field, and then top 10 Clemson. It's wild. It's a yo-yo. Yeah. And it's probably a lot of, you know, first year coach kind of finding his way sort of thing. I remember talking after the Stanford loss, to athletic director Jack Swarbrick at the CFP meetings. And I think it was just a few days after the Stanford loss. And I was like, what is going on with the Irish? I asked him. And he said, you know, I asked him about the response, I guess, he's seen in his football coach, and he wouldn't stop talking about it. You know, he's like, his message to the team, the what he's saying to them, the morale in the team, the culture, it's there. He can see it. I see it in the locker room. I see it at practice. Like, it's there. The messaging has been great. He's been awesome. And, of course, I'm a skeptical journalist thinking, like, come on, they just lost to Stanford at home. But lo and behold, they win three straight in some really big games, and clearly – the messaging, Jack was right. The messaging is there, and he's finding his way in his first year.
I mean, there's just like, he's a charismatic guy.
Oh yeah.
And you watch him win the game, and it's hard not to be like, you know what? Good for this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, the way he interacts with the players, the way he celebrates, he's young. It's like, I got this Notre Dame thing. Maybe I'm ready. Maybe I'm not. Here we go. And it's some cool visuals. I think this helps keep the recruiting class together, which was a massive concern, and pushes things forward. We'll see. It's one game. Doesn't mean you're, you know, look, don't give him the Charlie Weiss deal now.
And I'll say one more real quick thing. There was a lot of skepticism, not just in media, but in the coaching fraternity to Marcus Freeman's hire. There was jealousy even. Like, oh, yeah. there was a lot of it. Yeah. And I remember asking a few coaches, like, golly, why is Notre Dame such a roller coaster? And the first thing a couple of them said was, oh, they're getting out coached. Like, there's a lot of like kind of hate for that hire. And it's just been interesting to kind of get that feel among some coaches out there. And now we, you know, I'm sure Marcus hears that and sees that too.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, Swarbrick's invested in Marcus for that reason. He did not wait, and he could have had other very good candidates for that job. And he's just like, nope, we're going with this guy. We're keeping it in-house. He's young. You know, he stuck his neck out on this hire. So he's very much invested in seeing Freeman succeed, because as you're right, Ross, a lot of people are like, why does this 35-year-old guy get this job when there's so many other people that would take it? So,
well, it's always the case with the coordinator moved up, because it's like,
yep.
Then they're just going with it because it's like you got the job because of proximity. And, you know, I get it as a natural thing when you're sitting around going, I've been grinding. I did this. I'm winning it, you know, the group of five level. And then, hey, Ryan Datis gets damn Ohio State. Yeah. Marcus Freeman gets Notre Dame. Lincoln Riley just gets Oklahoma. Like, what are my chances here? And so there's always that. But, yeah, there was definitely a lot of suspicion. Again, one game doesn't do it. But, man, a really good win for the Irish and really good win for Marcus Freeman. Look, elsewhere around the country, TCU rolls on, setting up a big game against Texas, which, I blew it last week. I violated the Vegas rule. Vegas knew that they would beat Texas.
We all violated it, man. We all did.
I'm like, Vegas knows. What am I doing? And I still was like, no. And yeah, I was all wrong. Texas got a pulse. Texas, and you're going to get, we'll talk about it this week, but, you know, you're going to get, that's going to be a very interesting rivalry, because all of a sudden Texas Christian is the hunted.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas is the upstart. So that
a lot of layers there too, with Gary Patterson, you know.
Gary Patterson designing a defense to maybe upend the best TCU team ever, or at least the best one since they won the Rose Bowl. And then out west, everything held form. UCLA, USC, and Oregon won. The Pac-12 race is going well. And so that was all late. I watched a bunch of that late too. But a lot going on. Michigan State, we mentioned earlier, off the deck, beats Illinois. Terrible loss for Illinois.
Yeah.
Brett Bielema was complaining that the Michigan State kids kept getting injured and then coming back two plays later to stop the vaunted Illinois tempo offense.
Well,
actually, some of them were injured, and like, it's just, I did not watch the game, so I don't know, but I just find it hysterical that the Brett B tempo offense is too much.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
didn't have that one on the bingo card.
No, the Big Ten West is just a mess. it's pitiful.
It's embarrassing.
You know, I mean, Michigan State's having this horrible season and goes and beats them. Michigan State beats Wisconsin.
No, Michigan State spent the week having all their guys suspended. Everybody trying to go through the tape to see who else should be suspended. You know, there's a dude who, like, he might have kicked somebody in the shins. He's worried it's going to pop out. They're waiting for someone to get arrested.
Yeah, right.
They lose three defensive starters and they come out to Illinois. And in bad conditions, like, yeah, we'll just beat them. We actually control the game. It's like, okay, here we go. Yeah. The Big Ten championship game, cancel it and just do something else. Like, just, I don't know what. You know, play the women's soccer game there, or the whatever else is going on. Get a volleyball game going, and have fill the state. We do not need this. And as pointed out, you might lose computer points by playing.
Yeah, them, so right. I just looked like Sagarin, Illinois is 31st in Sagarin, which is actually a little higher than I thought they might be. But that's playing the number 31 team in a neutral field game isn't really going to help your strength of schedule very much. So.
Yeah. We will see where that goes on that.
Dan, you mentioned the Pac-12 and the late night goings on there. And that is an interesting race where you've got three teams still with one loss going forward. And UCLA and USC are going to play each other November 19th. And Utah is playing Oregon the same day. So the Pac-12 is going to have one really interesting weekend. But, what you know, are these teams really good? I think Oregon is. UCLA, not sure. USC, great offense, but the defense is terrible. And you get this from the defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch, at USC. You're 10 weeks into the season, which, as soon as I say that, you want to vomit at some of the issues we have 10 weeks into the season. So I don't know if some of these things we can get fixed in 48 hours and 72 hours. Yeah. Eventually with that defense, you're going to lose another couple of games, I would say.
Yeah. All right, one more I want to note, because I'll give them a lot of respect for this. North Carolina State, I've been waiting for them to quit on the season. And yeah. Instead, they're 7-2, and they just beat Wake Forest in a battle of top 25s. Freshman quarterback MJ Morris has stepped in due to injuries and played a nice game. You know, they still have their shot at their 10-win season. Like, I can't remember the stat. And then they've never had a 10-win season, I don't think.
Oh, they have. No, they have.
I'm sure that they were. One 10-win season. They had maybe one under Chuck Amato or something.
Right. Yeah, they were like 11-2 under Chuck Amato.
Yeah, anyway, so NC State with a really nice win. I don't, you know, not really going to factor into stuff, but they got BC, Louisville, and at North Carolina, they could end up 10-2 heading into a bowl game. But that team, I thought, should have folded the tent a while ago. And they
gave them up for dead after Devin Leary got hurt. So I am impressed with the way they've bounced back.
Credit to Dave Doran. And you know, Dave is kind of a – you hear his name out there for some other jobs. And I thought maybe losing his quarterback that they would – they would tank. And, hey, they might not get better than 6 wins. But here they are. And you wonder if his name will get a little louder now for the – specifically the one maybe at Nebraska where the interim Mickey Joseph just back-to-back losses since their bye and not looking great for him.
Well, Dave's a quiet guy. Like, what about Auburn? What about, like, I don't know that he would want to leave, but he's been there a long time. He's had 2 bad seasons. Everything else is 9-8. I mean, he's just a solid coach. Did a really good job at Northern Illinois. You get nothing, very little buzz about him. This is
too sane for Auburn, but the Midwest jobs, Nebraska. I think it looks more likely that Jim Leonard's going to keep Wisconsin. He's done a pretty good job there, but Nebraska one, if I were Nebraska, I'd want to talk to Dave Doran.
I mean, he's from suburbs of Kansas City and Kansas went to Drake and certainly did Northern Illinois. I don't know, though, but I'm sure NC State's yelling at we're not losing this guy, but he's done well at a place like kind of a prove it coach. You just kind of wonder. All right. We don't like to wait to the end of the year to give out the Heisman. We like doing it on a small sample.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the Small Sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Who wins your Heisman this week? Pat Forty, do you know?
I do, there's so many to choose from, and I hope, I'm going to say this, we haven't discussed this because we don't plan, but I hope somebody is picking someone from a certain American Athletic Conference game.
I got it.
Okay.
I can do that.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because.
if needed. Yep.
All right. I am going elsewhere. I'm going to Carson Steele, running back, Ball State, on Thursday night, I believe, or maybe even Wednesday night. I don't remember. Might have been Tuesday. I don't know. This, you know, it was a action game in the middle of the week. They played Kent State. They beat Kent State. Carson Steele is because he's got the like super long flowing hair. You don't necessarily look at him and say running back, but he had 29 carries, 192 yards, 6.6 yards a carry. He's been a workhorse all year. He's got 221 carries, 1,082 yards for Ball State. But here was the cinching factor. I'm looking this guy up from Center Grove High School in Indiana. I covered a playoff game there once in like 1987. And I'm reading about him, and the last line of his bio sold it to me for him being the small sample Heisman. Owns a pet alligator. I'm sure that is a rather unique thing in Muncie, Indiana. So if you got a 1,000-yard rusher at Ball State who has a pet alligator, you are my small sample Heisman winner. Thank you very much, Carson Steele.
Man, I can't top the pet alligator, but give me Texas running back Bijan Robinson. You know, we've heard a lot of the hype about him and how good he is. And, you know, the Heisman race took a pretty big hit this past weekend. You know, Bryce Young may have played his way out. Hendon Hooker, although he played well, his numbers weren't great in Alabama, saddled with another loss. It's hard to see Bryce winning it again. And Hendon Hooker kind of took his lumps as well. So you wonder, like, the Heisman race is kind of sort of open, and you've got a guy on, although it's three lost Texas, Bijan Robinson, who's had 100-yard games, seven straight weeks, 100-yard rushing games. He had a season high this past Saturday, 209 yards against Kansas State and a big win for Texas. They're 6-3. They host the big game against undefeated TCU. Game day is heading there this weekend. And overall the season, he's got over 1,100 yards, almost 200 attempts, 12 touchdowns. Guy's averaging 6 yards a carry. So Bijan Robinson, my small sample for this week.
All right, well, we got to get to this American game. Absolute nut house game. SMU 77, Houston 63. This was a football game.
Regulation.
I mean, let me put it this way. Like, Kelvin Sampson would be aghast if his basketball team ever gave up 77 points.
Oh, I got a stat for you on that, baby. Okay.
Oh, yeah. There's a good stat.
What is it?
The last time Houston gave up more than 77 points in anything was to SMU in basketball. Last February 9th, they lost 85-83. There were only two games all year last year when Houston in basketball gave up more than 77.
Kelvin likes it. He likes getting after it defensively.
Yes.
So I am going to give the Heisman Trophy here to Tanner Mordecai, their quarterback. I mean, pretty good stat line. 28 to 37, 379 yards passing, and 9 touchdowns. Also ran it 8 times for 54 and another touchdown. 10 freaking touchdowns. A 10-touchdown game. So I could give it to him. However, and I get this stat from Joseph Durratt, who is the beat writer at the Houston Chronicle of Houston. Peruna, SMU Shetland pony that we last saw crapping all over the field with George W. Bush in the stands.
Yes, we did.
Peruna with 11 touchdowns. After every touchdown, Peruna the horse, the Shetland pony, not Wetzel the horse. Peruna has to run from the end of one end zone to the other. Okay, that is it. Peruna rushed for 1,320 yards in a single game. So my Heisman Trophy, it's Breeders' Cup weekend. You can give it to an animal, right? Not Flightline. It's not Wetzel the horse. It's Peruna, the Shetland pony, who treated George W. Bush to a treat and then rushed for 1,320. I mean, you're exhausted at the end of that. Extra treats for Peruna and a Heisman Trophy, and good job your quarterback as well.
The horse on the field was still my favorite moment of 2022. And right behind it is what happened this past weekend with the choo-choo train of Purdue, which stalled out in the middle of the field in Iowa. The Iowa football team had a run around it. It was unbelievable. That and the f***ing pony, you can't beat them. It was just freaking incredible, man.
I think that train got like a noise violation in Madison, too. The police cited it for like, yeah.
This is all karma coming back on Purdue for the drum lie.
The drum situation. You know? Yeah. That's all
here we go. Huh?
Yeah. We got a Texas home game. We may do a lot on the drum this week. We'll see. We'll see. A lot going on. All right. We've said a lot of mean things. Can we say something nice to end the show? Ross, you got anything nice to say about anybody?
Yeah. You know, look, Hugh Freeze and Liberty have, taken their, we've said, there's been a lot of bad said about both of those two things. And there's reasons why. And there's a past to both of those, the person in school. But, man, you got to give it up. Hugh Freeze goes in and beats Arkansas with the Flames. He was on at one point this year, his third string quarterback. They're going to win at least 8 games for a fourth straight year every year he's been there. You know, in 11 years as a head coach, he has had one season where he's not had a 500 or better record. So if he's not going to get a big boy job after this season, then he's not going to get a big boy job, because what he's done there has been amazing. And again, I know there's some issues there, right? There's the NCAA issues. There's other off-the-field issues that happen at Ole Miss. And there's a lot of ADs that, won't take that chance on him. But I have a feeling there's going to be some ADs and some schools who are hungry enough for wins and who have, and believe that Hugh has changed and all that, that we'll give him a shot. But that's why something nice a little bit in there is the Liberty Flames and Hugh Freeze at 8-1 having won at Arkansas.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, they lost one game by 1 point to Wake Forest, who's a ranked team, and they went for two. They went for the Brian Kelly play at the end and lost. Yeah. They missed. I mean, that's the only game they've lost. And that's after having Malik Willis, who was this foundational quarterback, and losing him. So, yeah, Hugh Freeze can coach, period. That's for sure. All right, I'm going to say something nice about a part of the game that I really don't like very much, and that's punting. But we had ourselves a punting weekend. We really did. We had, Pittsburgh, with the wind and the rain and everything going on, Pittsburgh had a 2-yard punt. Illinois had a punt where the punter kicked it into the backside of one of his blockers, but not like the guy right in front of him. It was like a guy on the line of scrimmage. He kicked it so low that it just would drill the guy right in the rear end. That was a debacle. But then we had some star punting too. Colin Goodfellow, the Kentucky punter, saved the game against Missouri. They're trying to hold on to a lead late, and they snap the ball over his head, and he has to go running back 30 yards to pick it up. But he picks it up, stays within the tackle box, and gets the kickoff. And so it's roughing the kicker when Missouri runs over him. Whether that rule makes sense or not is neither here nor there. I don't think you should be able to, go run for a free ball and then pick it up and have some sort of protection.
It's between the hash marks between the tackles even, maybe.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, if it's a loose ball out there and you're running around to pick it up, you're a live player. But that's not the rule. So he gets the kick off, roughing the kicker. They get the ball. They keep possession. They win the game at Missouri. And then one other
punt. I go 10-1 on my locks of the week with that. It's a perfect call. What if he drops the punt? You just get to tackle him? No.
Yeah. Yeah,
player safety, Pat. He got carted off.
Whatever.
10-1.
10-1. That's the only good thing we can say about our picks, period. That's
terrible.
I think we should do no more picks.
Yeah. On that note, Pat, let me interrupt you real quick.
Yeah.
My lock of the week, Southern Miss -2, they lost 42-14.
Yeah, that's just how our missed. Picks went this
just
week.
Missed. Yeah. Just missed on that one.
But one other punt, the perfect punt, the greatest punt maybe I've ever seen in the game that I covered, Georgia against Tennessee.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. Brett Thorson, the freshman kicker from, of course, Melbourne, Australia, punting hotbed, Australia, he blasts one, and he kicked that thing. And I said to Mark Schlabaugh, I was sitting next to him, I said, oh, my God, that's a Greg Camarda punt, who's now in the NFL, the former Georgia punter. But it was even better than the Greg Camarda punt. It's a bomb. Goes like 55 in the air, hits around the 20, and just rolls sideways, out of bounds at the one-yard line. 75 yards, no return, coffin corner out of bounds at the one. Best punt ever.
Punters. They're athletes. All right, I am going to say something nice about Coastal Carolina. And the Sun Belt had a heck of a year. There was the, you know, Georgia Southern beats Nebraska. Marshall beats Notre Dame. Appalachian State, beats A&M. Didn't they have game day at Appalachian State? There's all this stuff. Sun Belt is absolutely rolling. Huge year. Everything going great. And not a lot of hype on Coastal Carolina. Well, guess who controls the East? Guess who's 8-1? It's like, you guys all have your fun. Here comes Daddy. Coastal Carolina is going to run this league. Jamie Chadwell, Grayson McCall, they find a way to win, beat App State on a great game on Thursday night. Way the hell better than the NFL one. They're 8-1, 5-1 in Sun Belt play. A great defensive performance, held App to just 88 yards. And once again, the championship is going to run through Coastal Carolina, or they're going to win it. And so I this program is amazing on their stability and what they've been able to do, and Chadwell and the whole thing. So a lot of hype about the Sun Belt, and then all those teams that won big games have faded, and Coastal is still there. So that is my say something nice. There isn't even like a twist in it where I then say something mean.
It's a good one. We do know Coastal Carolina president Michael Benson listens to the podcast. That is not influencing the say something nice.
So he goes on a walk, he says, every morning, like by the beach. I don't know if that's true, but it's what he says. We'll see if he made it all the way to the end.
Yeah, okay, we'll see if he went an hour deep here.
Did he go deep? If he did, let us know if you made it all the way to the end. No, and if you're a Coastal fan, don't clue him in. We'll see. Had to get all the way to the end. All right, that is our show. It was a wild weekend, great weekend. We'll be back on Tuesday. There'll be more updated rankings, of course, and we'll prep as we go forward. Getting into the heart of the stretch run, and it's pretty fun. So we appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us, and subscribing, of course, and leaving nice reviews. It warms our heart. We will talk to you later.